This is the Power Producers Podcast, where we are refining and redefining the sales game.
Rule number one is you have to believe in yourself. You're the only one who doesn't think you belong in this appointment. The prospect has already validated your existence by scheduling time with you. Get it through your head you belong here, go in there, crush it, and close the deal.
A place where sales professionals can come to learn from other sales professionals and thought leaders that have mastered their craft.
The difference between a good salesperson and a best-in-class salesperson is only 2 minutes. By spending an extra 2 minutes on what you might think is a mundane task in the sales game, you separate yourselves from the pack, you grow your book of business, you close more deals, and you retain your accounts.
As well as their peers who are still striving for perfection to achieve their why.
I have a wife and 4 kids. Failure is not an option.
Real sales professionals. Real stories. Real results.
It's no different than being a professional baseball player. You can't be a one-trick pony. You have to be a 5-tool player in order to succeed in this game.
This is the Power Producers Podcast, production redefined. Are you ready to feel the power?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Power Producers Podcast, where we are refining and redefining the sales game. And I'm pumped up about recording today, man. Number one,
back in action.
Yeah, I got Kyle back in the
back in the fold.
Yeah, back in the mix, so to speak, which is good. You know, not just because he's here, but because of the reasons he wasn't able to be here. I'm glad that some of that's passed too, because I know how stressful that kind of stuff can be when you have little kids. But also because we have a lot of our key partners that we're talking to today that participate with us in Killing Commercial and Producers in Paradise and Key West. And Zane Goldthorpe from Pro Riders is certainly one of them. I mean, we've been doing business with them for a number of years at this point. Brian Thornton, the CEO, is a good friend of mine and always a great resource for the members of our community. And we can't say enough good things about him other than if we're using them and you're not, there's a high likelihood we're going to beat you at the point of sale. So I'll leave it at that. No more smack talk. But, you know, Zane, before we get into too much about Pro Riders and some of the things you're doing, which is quite a bit. You've done a lot to push that platform even further forward since you've been there. I thought it was pretty great the way that it started out, but you know, we can't remain stagnant in anything we do. Why don't you give everybody a little bit of your background so that they know that you're not just some rando that we put on here and you actually know what you're talking about?
Yeah. So I've been in cyber insurance for 17 years. I tease people all the time. When I started cyber, you know, people laughed at me when I told them what I did. I
mean, you like actually started cyber insurance.
Yeah. The guy he worked with, that's his claim to fame, right?
Is my,
he
wrote my former the first business cyber partner. Yeah. He created the first cyber policy. So I started learning. That's all I learned. I mean, it was, and you know, we always teased back then. I mean, it was part of a sell for 7 years. I joined in 07, and for 7 years, it was brutal. Nobody took
cyber. People are like, what are you talking about? We don't need that.
Yeah, Kyle, I'm not lying when people laughed.
Guess whose place Zane took at his predecessor?
Oh.
J-Hop.
Oh, okay.
Jared Hopkins was there before Zane, and then
we were there together.
Yeah. Oh, were you there together? No kidding.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, we have some, yeah. Don't get into too many stories of me and Jared. We had a lot of fun.
He's gotten too fancy these days, man. I don't hear from him nearly as much as I used to. I hope you're listening, J-Hop, on the way to the golf course or wherever you're going today.
Our strategy back in the early days of cyber, this is when, you know, me and Jared and Steve, our strategies were, okay, what do we do this week to try to get a few submissions?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We didn't even count. Like, a bind order was like, not even, it was like, how do we get submissions? Mm-hmm. And the way we, you know, kind of functioned in those early years when cyber was just not doing anything was just tech E&O. That was technology companies understood cyber. They got it. And so we would sell them on the tech E&O product. And then obviously we would lump on cyber insurance, cyber liability included in the policy. And they understood that data. They understood with what we do, if we lose data, we got a world of trouble. So that was, I mean, 7 straight years, that was how we kept that thing going. And then in 2014, you know, that was kind of the year everybody, it was the year of the big retail breach. you know, the Target Home
Target,
Depot.
Yeah.
It all kind of hit in that same year. And that was when the awareness finally came to the market. And the people were laughing, were finally going, wait, is that what you've been telling me about all these years? And so it really started to snowball after that. You know, I'd say 2015 through 2020, if you're in the cyber industry, I mean, you were running hard. It was everybody's diving in. And, you know, that stage, we had a great brand name, so we were doing well. And, you know, it was just managing growth. But more importantly, you know, businesses were starting to maybe vaguely understand what the product was and what the exposure was and understand, like, we need to think about this.
So well, what was know, the...
I was gonna say, go ahead, Kyle.
Well, I was just going to say, like, what was the change like? Because, like, I mean, you're like, for the first 7 years, people were laughing us out of the room, right? Except for the tech, you know, lumping it in with the tech companies who understood it. But, like, when it started to, like, catch, you know, I'm sure you just got inundated. Like, you know, what was that like? Going from being laughed out of doors to be like, okay, now we got more submissions than we can deal with.
Yeah, well, I want to piggyback on that, because I kind of was going to say something similar, you know. Companies understanding it's one thing, getting the agents to understand it is probably an equal battle. So in order for you to get inundated, you had to have agents even recognize it was an issue so they could talk to their client about it and then push that business back.
Beyond just that, that's exactly right. I mean, because we're a wholesaler. We're especially wholesale. We don't talk to the clients, and we do on large accounts, but we don't talk to them day in, day out. So we're at the mercy of a retailer presenting this. And a lot of retailers... you know, still today, it really kind of scares me, but a lot of retailers didn't take it serious and they just didn't even offer or present it. So you're just constantly having to get to them of, hey, you know, you need to take this serious before you learn the hard way, which eventually was happening. And so that was a challenge. And then getting them to understand it to a level where they could present it to their clients was a different thing, because you get a lot of agents back in those, you know, the 14, 15s that, they'd go in with one product. They'd go in with the easiest thing they could get their hands on. It might be standard market, but they'd go in with whatever they got. The scary factor was they'd go in with, oh, we got cyber. It's on the BOP. It's an endorsement. And so that was our obstacle and our battle was, okay, you can't go in with one product. You've got to go in and show them the marketplace. But obviously with small business, it's challenging to spend the time. You know, that was kind of what I spent a lot of my time in 14 through 16 was trying to find a way to present multiple options in comparison in a manner that didn't take 2 hours. You know, and so that was the big challenge. But I remember there was a product early on that was an online quoting shop that, you know, asked a few questions, get a quote, bind it all here. And that was a big competitor for me at the time. And I had to really use that as a, you cannot sell one product. You can't do it. And if you look at what happened in the hard market of 21, 22, anybody who had lumped all their cyber with one carrier had a really, really rough couple of years. Because
it's not even just that, though. I mean, and this is something that I think the agents need to hear and understand. Number one, you can't keep up with all the changes in the cyber marketplace as a generalist agency. Now, if your agency only does tech, E&O, and cyber, you may have a fighting chance. But if you're a generalist, you're already behind the eight ball. The other thing is, if you've never been through a cyber claim before, how are you going to advise your client the right way, number one? And number two, you really have no understanding for how quickly those claims can escalate. I was in line in one of the Facebook groups over the last couple of weeks, and I was talking with a group of agents specifically about this. And I said, one of the reasons why I refer everything, or multiple reasons why I refer everything over to pro writers, is really simple. Number one, they're experts at what they do. And they're staying ahead of all of the things that are happening that I don't have to worry about. If I have questions, obviously, I'll ask them and get them answered. But the other piece is even probably more important from a financial perspective. And that is, I want you guys to take the hit on your loss ratio. If I've got a contract with Chubb and I go write a policy with Chubb for cyber that's monoline, and that thing has a breach and it ends up going into the couple million dollar range, I just blew out my loss ratio for my profit sharing for the entire year. Now, agents don't think that way because they're worried about giving up 5 points here, 5 points there in commission. But the reality is cyber premiums aren't a huge amount. So I'm going to ask you in a minute what the average cyber premium is that you see across general industry, you know, and I don't expect it to be exact, but let's just say it's even $10,000. You're giving up $500 in revenue to protect what could be $100,000. That is not a difficult business decision in any math that I've ever done.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's, you know, I haven't heard anybody mention that, but that is a very good point. And, you know, early on, the standard markets were in it. Their policies weren't up to speed with the market. Now they are definitely a little better. But I look at it in terms too, part of the value out of the policies and with all the insurtechs that have entered the space now is that claims handling process that you're going to get. And
well, in the frontline underwriting too, because we had nothing. It was the Wild West when this thing started out.
Oh, they knew. And, you know, there's been a big change in underwriting in the last few years. It used to be record count was a huge deal, and because everything back in the day was the losses were all how much do we have to pay in notification costs. That's changed quite a bit. Now the underwriting has shifted. It was record count and revenue. Now you're at an insurer's security controls that they have in place play a much bigger factor in underwriting, which is a great thing in my mind, because if you're investing, I always say, you'll hear me say it all the time, it's not just you need to buy cyber or security services, it's both. You really need to invest in both. And if you can get an insured to understand, if I invest in better securities, I'm going to save a lot of money on my cyber, well, then it's a no-brainer. And we're starting, I believe we're starting to see that. I had an example last year of one as an eye physician, I think about $30 million in revenue, and their premium, they did not have MFA, they did not have EDR, and they didn't have any of it. And when we quoted them, and then they asked, what would happen if we put these things in place because we're interested? And I said, well, let's quote it and assume you have it. Premium was 50% less. And they went out and they purchased the securities that they needed to. And I was like, that's the ultimate victory. Now they're good to go in both. You know, we've severely limited their potential of a claim, but also backing them up in the event they still have one.
Yeah. And I mean, we've seen a lot of stuff happen over the last couple of years, specifically around multi-factor authentication. Yeah. I don't think anybody likes it. You know, we love it, but we don't like it, right? We love that we're getting protected by it, but my goodness, does it suck when you need to get something.
Every time I'm trying to get into HubSpot, man, I tell it, don't ask me this again. Every single time, always asks me the next time.
But it's funny because, you know, Angel Rojas from DataCore, who is my MSP here at Florida Risk, is also our client. And it was probably 2 years ago at his renewal where he came back and he's like, man, these guys are really starting to figure out how to ask the questions of what we're really doing. He said, you know, these applications used to be maybe a page long if we're lucky. Now it's 12 pages long and it's like drilling down into MFA and EDR and all of this other stuff. And he's like, kudos to the industry for figuring it out. I'm like, yeah, it's probably because they got their plow cleaned with claims by not asking these questions, sadly. But, you know, I mean, I think that we wanted to make everything so easy to use for everybody so that they would recommend it and sell it that, you know, if you had a 15-page cyber application and you hand that to an agent who really doesn't understand cyber or think that it's important, you're probably not going to have a lot of success with it.
Yeah, and if you go back to the early days of cyber, like we were talking about earlier, from 15 to 20, there was a race to the bottom amongst the carriers. All the MGAs, all the carriers, everybody was fighting each other to get market share. So the premiums just kept going down. And the requirements to get a quote kept going down. And we got to the stage in you know, 18, 19, 20, where if you were a smaller business and wanted a cyber quote, there was one carrier, you did not even have to sign an application. They legitimately would just tell you, okay, we're going to put a statement of fact in our policy that you're just agreeing that you don't, you know, your revenues are this and you've never had a claim. And if that's the case, then you're good to go. And that was nuts. And then obviously when the market, you know, 21, 22, when you had the big shift in the market, then all of a sudden it's like overnight, the requirements are now, if you don't have an MFA, if you don't have EDR, proper backups, well, then you're just not able to get a policy. And that's what it looked like for about 2 years. And then in 23, it's like we turned around and went backwards. And now it's, the requirements are easing off, which does make me a little nervous because, we're seeing big claims activity as well. But I think a big part too with some of the top insurtechs is they're offering a security service as part of their policy now. And some of them, it's, you pay a premium. And we have a security team that is, we've built it into the premium, and you can access these providers. There's one that basically says, if you have no proceed policies in place, we'll still quote you very competitively, but it's contingent upon that you have to take up our vendors. And it's interesting. David, I'd like to hear your viewpoint on how you take that. But my viewpoint is, if you don't have these in place, there's some agents who say, well, if this carrier doesn't require it, but this carrier does, I'm just going to go with the easiest. My take is, I mean, they need both. It's built in the premium, and the carrier's on the hook for the loss. So they're not going to go get a poor team that's going to help you with your security. They're going to get somebody good because it's in their financial interest to not have claims. But
Yeah, I
curious.
think the other thing there, though, Zane, is the carriers aren't stupid. I mean, they're the ones with the big buildings in all the big cities. They got all the money. So, they may make it easier for you to get a policy, but what's that policy really cover? I mean, look at social engineering for an example. Social engineering used to be full policy limits across the board. Now you're getting things where you're getting down to 250,000 or below on a sublimit. So they may be making it easier to get the policy, but they're also capping their exposure at a much lower amount, which I'd be interested in seeing the actuarial data on that, which got them to the point where they decided where they're going to settle on those things. But, we're always going to be a proponent of our clients using the carrier resources because it's in their best interest to do so. And specifically, even in the claims process, man, like when you have a claim, these people that the carriers have in place from PR to forensics to all of this other stuff are top shelf organizations, and they're going to do the best job possible for your client. Yeah, they care about your client, but they're also trying to protect the carrier's exposure on how much they're going to have to pay out. And so, for me, I think that if you have a client who doesn't understand why these things are important, it's because you as an agent haven't done a good job in educating them on why this stuff is important and why it should be a requirement. There's this us versus them mentality out there with people. Like, it's us versus the insurance company, and it really shouldn't be that way. But I feel like that's some of what has bred people to think they don't want to use carrier-based security services because somehow, the carrier is going to get that same
Look for a way to
information from the
not.
security people, and it's going to either raise
Yeah.
their rates or whatever else, which cracks me up because then they turn around and they go watch TikTok for, an hour, and we all know where TikTok stands right now in the eyes of our government. So it's so weird, but I do feel like it falls on the responsibility of the agent to educate our clients and prospects as to why this is important. But in order for us to do that, the agents have to be educated. And I mean, I know Chubb has a really, really good course that results in a designation through, I think it's through Carnegie Mellon, if it still is. But it's like a year-long process or more. And you may even have the designation, Zane. I don't know. That's not practical for the average agent on the street, right? I don't think that everybody needs to be a complete cyber expert when you have people like ProWriters that can do that for you, but we still have to have a functional working knowledge. We need to have an understanding of what the different acronyms mean, why they're relevant, and then have talking points as to why we need to be able to explain that to our clients and prospects. And so that's kind of a long lead-in, but your baby right now, from what I can tell, has been ProWriters University, Cyber University, what you're doing to educate that frontline agent. Because I think one of the most misunderstood responsibilities that we as agents and producers have is frontline underwriting. We need to know what that risk looks like, what controls they have in place, not necessarily because the application says it, but because we need to do that to make sure we're giving the best advice to the client and taking the best quality risk to our partners as possible. And, I think you guys are doing a great job with that. Why don't you talk about that for a little bit and what you've done to build that out?
Yeah, so that's a great point. And I'll just say, for all these years, It's one of the biggest pet peeves is there's a terrible lack of education in cyber insurance. I've always felt it's really bad. I talk to agents all the time. I've had agents for years tell me, I'd love to sell more cyber. I'd like to, start offering it, but I don't know anything about it and I'm not comfortable selling something that I don't understand. And I say, okay, I understand that. I get it, but we're starting to see a lot of these claims hit and they're not just hitting. And if you're not offering cyber and your client has a breach and you didn't offer cyber, then they're probably going to be looking at your E&O. And so I kind of realized we got to do better with education. I mean, the way it always worked was if an agent asked, how do I learn more about cyber? The response they would generally get is, oh, here, read this white paper or go watch this pre-recorded webinar, which nobody ever goes and watches. So, we started, Brian and I were talking about that, and that was, we've constantly putting out education on LinkedIn on our website, but we were thinking, what can we do that's a little more? And so we started studying different video platforms and whatnot, and we found one, and we started looking in at animation, and that's kind of how, I found something. I told Brian, let me do the 2-week free trial and just play around with it. So made a couple little 1.5 minute videos on funds transfer, social engineering, showed it to Brian, and we were like, okay, there's something to this. So started building that out, and kind of third quarter of last year, I think, is when we put the first probably 7 or 8 videos out. And it really turned out to be a big hit with agents because it's bite size. I mean, like I said, 1.5 to 2.5 minutes long is the average length of each individual topic. And what I've did was I started by taking, if you look at our comparison that we give you, and when you run a quote through CyberIQ, you get a comparison that goes through all the exposures. And we give you definitions on there so that you can kind of have a quick refresher and maybe educate your client. Well, I started building videos that go side by side on every topic on the comparison. So now you can get the quick definition, but you can also look at a video that explains the coverage and gives claims examples in a more visual format. And so started putting that out there and start and the response was great. Agents started telling me, hey Zane, this is great. We're using it, but honestly, we're sending these videos to our clients as well because we want to educate our clients on what this stuff is. That's most important. And so I thought about it and I was like, okay, well, that's fantastic. It's like, but when I'm building these, I'm narrating as if I'm talking to a insurance agent. So if these are getting pushed on to the client, I need to change my tune a little bit. And so what I've started doing in the last probably 1.5 months, the last 4 videos, if you see, I think we've got over 20 now, the last 4 videos, I am they're industry specific. Why the first one is why the healthcare industry needs cyber, which that's a hot topic right now. Then it was why financial services firms need cyber. These are the high hazard classes. Well, then I started talking to agents who started nonstop. The response I was getting was, well, we write a lot of contractors and they don't need cyber. They don't have data. So we don't really even. And so that you'll see one of my videos is why contractors need cyber, because that's a whole nother discussion. And then also why manufacturers need. So the direction we're going with the education is now I'm talking to a business owner is why you have an exposure because, and this is your class of business. This is what your exposure is. And it's geared for our agents. They use that to share with their clients. And so you're going to see a lot more of that get built out in the coming months.
I think the fact that it's short, like you mentioned, and you talked about specific claim examples, that's the biggest part, right? I think that's what people can't wrap their head around sometimes is like, how is this going to have an impact on me? Like for your with your contractors, we write a lot of contractors, right? So we have those conversations with them and they just like, cyber, like what? Like,
Their
dude,
first
I build
thought,
houses. What are you talking about?
it's like the exact question, it's like the exact answer every time. Oh, we don't have data. We don't need this. And that goes right back into the educational, for
How do you
agents
get
first.
paid?
Yeah, exactly. Cyber is a lot different now than it was 7 years ago when we were insuring you for loss of data and having to notify. It's ransomware attacks. That's probably the top thing right now. And it is cybercrime. They are coming for your bank account. If
Yeah,
you
like
have a
seriously,
corporate
man,
bank
like hey, Johnny Construction at gmail.com. All it takes is them to click the attachment one time and they're toast, man.
And then once they get on, it can lead to, I mean, they can find their way to wire money out of your account left and right, or trick you into releasing the money voluntarily, or they can find ways to, if you're a manufacturer, they're probably going to find a way to get in there and just shut you down. and then come after you for a large, extortion, a large ransom, and you can't generate revenue. You're locked out. You can't, your assembly lines are frozen up. You can't produce product. And so they're just, the hackers are just always finding ways to do the newest tricks, and they just don't slow down. And so the response, we don't have data. That to me now is like, that's good. That's good, but you have a bank account,
Right.
and that's where they're coming. And invoice manipulation is a good one. I've got a video on that one, and that's a very interesting claim, because I've been a part. I've had to see some of these claims take place, and I'm telling you, they are nasty. They are
What'd
very
you say?
nasty.
Invoice manipulation
Invoice
specifically?
manipulation. If you look, the video I built on invoice manipulation, I've got two people sitting there like in a fist fight, because that's what it turns into. You've got a vendor and you've got a contractor. It's a contractor is a huge class that sees these. This is a class of business where they're used to writing large checks for their day-to-day supply to get the job done. It is their wiring money left and right. Somebody gets into the suppliers network, let's say,
Bingo.
and they monitor. Yeah, you got they monitor your activity. They find an invoice, they change the routing number, they send it to the contractor through an actual email. It's not through a fake email, it's a real email. Contractor gets it, releases the money. Week later, you never paid us. And then once they find out that there was a breach, it just gets ugly.
Well, and the
That's
thing is,
crazy.
sometimes they won't even know that that happened because, they get into your Outlook and create Outlook rules, and they send the real invoice to a subfolder that turns around and then holds it for a second and forwards it back out to some Gmail address in the Eastern Bloc, overseas. And that's how they even know you're expecting the invoice, right? Because then they can go in and they can take that actual invoice that they've gotten their hands on, mask the email or however they make that work, and send it to you. It looks completely legitimate. You're expecting it, but it's not the right one. The other thing that I've seen, recently, I on a policy was anything that you do where you get wire instructions sent to you over email as opposed to over the phone with verbal authorization is excluded from coverage. If somebody sends you wire instructions and you get it on email and you execute that wire and you didn't call to verify that it was right before you did it, there is no coverage for it.
We've seen, I
Wow.
remember there used to always be the dual authentication requirement for social engineering. And they probably we it started to go away, but now with the amount of all these cybercrime attacks that are going on, social engineering, we have seen it start creeping back in. It's one of those of you got to read the policy, you got to know what's in there. And some, I don't think all of them are adding it in there, but it's definitely something that we've seen starting to come back, because the carriers are losing money for these attacks left and right, and they're trying to find a way out of it. And it kind of also goes back what you talked about earlier. There are heavy sublimits on these coverages now. I mean, 250 is about the max you're going to get now, whereas it used to be policy limits. And so some of these companies who are wiring larger sums of money out, 250 is probably not enough. And so one of the things when we talk about the insurtechs is there's a few insurtechs out there who have the security services that have been touting. They've got a clawback statistics that have been going on, where because of their technology and because of their security side, if you have a policy with them and you notify them, quickly after the money has been gone, they recovered 65% of funds last year. That in these situations, that's a big deal. That's a big advantage to have a policy. Let's say you have $1 million wired out and you only had 250 in social engineering or funds transfer, but your carrier goes and recovers all of the money. Now you don't have to pay a retention. It really, technically probably doesn't count as a claim. So that's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing too is the vulnerability assessments that are done on the front end. Look, I understand that these are not full-blown dark web scan, forensic cyber audits or anything, but they are precursors that they identify to things that are going to be much larger issues. And I'm telling you, if I'm an agent on the streets right now and I understand how to sell workers' comp by leading with the experience modification factor, I should easily be able to take that exact same strategy by using the vulnerability assessment that comes out with whatever percentage they are, because the mod's a percentage as to where you are relative to average. Go out and sell cyber the same way. If you get somebody who's got a bad score, go in and take a copy of it, show it to them, and explain to them, it's not an accident that I'm talking to you about this stuff. This is a direct result of you not having controls in place, and it's going to ultimately end up in you paying a lot more for your premium. Yeah. So if the agents aren't quoting this with all of their renewals and then actually looking at what the information is that comes back, aside from just saying, oh, well, this one's got the lowest premium, this guy's a price buyer, I'm going to go ahead and sell this. That's not how it works. You got to be able to go in and look at that coverage comparison that comes with every pro rider's quote. And I got to tell you, man, you guys have that locked down. I love
it's the best.
Yeah, I love the fact that I can get that. I know exactly what I'm looking for. I'm starting with pay on behalf of a reimbursement. If it ain't pay on behalf of, that's a non-starter.
Not even going to look at it.
Yeah, no. And then I'm just going to walk right down the line. But I mean, to your point, with all the sublimits and everything else that are out there right now, these quotes are not all created equal. You might find one that's a much cheaper price and everything looks good except that one sublimit or exclusion. Yeah. And because it comes out on that spreadsheet the way that it does, it just makes it so much easier for us to analyze what we're going to offer to our client.
Yeah, that, and that's the entire intent. I mean, what Brian and Chris in our office built, the entire intent of what they do is to make the agent's life easier. I mean, that's our whole business model, is we've got to make y'all's lives easier. And that's what the comparison is so good for. And if you really look at, if you dive into one, I mean, we talk about the scans as well. Some of these insurtechs will run a scan, and if they find a vulnerability, they'll still put a quote out there, and the pricing may still be competitive. But what they'll do is they'll hit a sublimit on a critical coverage. So it might be like ransomware. We're going to sublimit you to $100,000 because we found this in your report. And then what they'll say is, if you go repair this, we'll remove the sublimit, and you get the premium. You know, you get the same premium full coverage. And so me. I mean, I look at that from your standpoint and think that's a big advantage, because there's no reason to just move on to the next guy in line. We want our agents to have that conversation with their insured, like, hey, so they found this and you need to take this serious. It used to be the IT person within a business used to seem to be our worst nightmare trying to sell insurance. You know, you probably had the same experience.
They thought you were going to take their job.
Yeah. And we built an untouchable system. Nobody can get us. Well, now I feel like the IT people are sitting there like, please get the policy. Please. We want every protection. Mm-hmm. And I think they look at the reports in a much different manner now. Instead of a threat, they look at it as, we'll take whatever we can get. If you find something, we will love to see it and analyze it and, you know, see what we need to do. So I feel like that's
makes their job easier, right?
Exactly. And that's a big part now. I mean, we're seeing, you know, you've seen EDR, endpoint detection response. We've seen that for the last few years. And now I think it's slowly kind of moving into the carriers they're looking more into MDR now, managed detection response, because you can have the output going out there. But if nobody's actually looking at it, it doesn't do anything. You know, you need somebody to actually be monitoring the results and seeing the issues and then notifying the insured of, hey, here's what's going on. We need to fix this. So I think we're going to see more of that in the future, which is, again, it's a good thing.
So what do you see on the horizon? I mean, obviously, we all know about social engineering and wire fraud and some of those things, but what are some of the lesser known things that you're seeing maybe?
I feel like we're about to get into an episode of Black Mirror right now.
Well, we touched on the invoice manipulation, because it's not new, but I think we're starting to see it be more aggressive.
Yeah, they're getting better at it. And that's the other thing.
They're getting very good at it. Yeah, ransomware, if you really look at that, everybody's very familiar with it, but it definitely took a big dive in 22, and then in 23 it came back with a vengeance. And now the things I'm reading about ransomware is they're getting much more aggressive, and I mean, now they'll take the data and they'll just wipe you clean. They'll just destroy it. And so the demands, I think, are getting higher. I mean, we're the Change Health claim that we're in the middle of right now, I think it's a huge, it's a huge situation to watch considering the cyber insurance industry, because we're talking about, I mean, the reports are they've already paid a $22 million ransom, which that that means the hackers won. You know, they're what they did, they just got $22 million. They're coming back to do this more. But the bigger issue is that you got thousands of these healthcare facilities that are losing money day in, day out because of what's going on here. And you know, if they all have policies with dependent business interruption coverage, this could be an event that triggers a lot of cyber insurance policies. So we're looking at it. Pricing really in 23 dramatically started to come backwards. You know, we went from a super hard market to really pulling back and softening up. At that same time, we saw ransomware start skyrocketing again. We've seen a lot of carriers kind of easing off their security controls. Now we got losses that could trigger big, you know, big loss. And so it's just kind of like, oh, you know, surely we're not going to see a hard market again soon, but the indicators are there that it's in the works, but it usually doesn't happen overnight. You know, it's usually something that's a few years. But I think when you talk about what's next, exposure, I think everybody's talking about AI. And,
well, that's exactly what I was going to say, man. As you were talking, I think one of the reasons ransomware and phishing and stuff seems to be back on the rise again is because the quality of the freaking emails these people send are going through the roof. And so where my mind went with that was, I wonder how many of these people are actually, you know, when they're, I'm not a cyber criminal, so I don't know how they operate. And I assume they're blanketing as many people as they can. If I were a cyber criminal, I would target the people that I thought would be the easiest to influence or the busiest, so they might get sloppy. And I would do a little bit of research on that person, because our lives are on social these days. And I would go into ChatGPT and write a prompt around who this person is and ask it to construct an email in the right voice. And then you're going to get a perfect email that, if they've done their homework on you, is going to sound so flipping realistic that you're not going to think anything of it. And so I wonder how much ChatGPT and the different AI tools that you can use are influencing how the hackers are operating, because I feel like they could do a pretty good job if they try.
Absolutely. And another good example of a recent big claim is the casinos. What was it? I think it was MGM and Caesar's Palace that, you know, obviously late last year had a massive breach. And when you look into it, you know, that's another, this is a good example to use when you get the pushback from a buyer that we don't need cyber insurance. We've invested in security. We're good. Well, these casinos invested tens of millions.
Yeah.
There is no security.
No, there's no enough. No. And how did they get through? They got through in a 10-minute phone call where the hacker, who probably did exactly what you, I hadn't thought about this, but they probably did exactly what you did. They probably found a specific target, studied the guy on social media, found everything, and they impersonated an employee, and they called the IT help desk, and they acted as if they're in this extreme hurry. We got to get on. We got a deadline. I got to get on. But I'm in a place where I don't have my password. I can't do the MFA. I need you to turn the MFA off for me real quick so I can get, and the person fell for it. They turned off the MFA and let the hacker get on, and boom, you've got a monstrous loss. That's how it happened. So human error will never go away.
Yeah.
That's always going to be one of the biggest. And now when you've got AI doing these things, and you've got, you think about voice recognition now. I mean, you get, you know, the dual authentication requirement to me is useless nowadays, because if you, what the hackers will do, they'll hit you with the email, CEO, I'm in massive panic, need the money, wire it now. Then they'll follow that up to the same person with a phone call with a voice generated, you know, that sounds exactly like the CEO, you know, chewing the person out. I got to get the money sent. So, I mean, how are you not going to, if you're an employee who's been there a few years and you think your CEO is chewing you out, you're going to send the money.
Right.
Like, it just, and it's that sophisticated that we're going to see that continue. And it's
crazy, man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and even cloning your voice by getting you on the phone for an unrelated call, recording it, and then using that to create the voice clone.
I mean, if you really look at it, people hardly ever pick up the phone anymore if they don't recognize a number.
Mine's filtered to automatically go to voicemail.
And that's what I say. I mean, maybe from us as business people, calling people makes it really hard, but I get it because I'm the same way. I'm like, they use when you answer and say hello or say a few words, is anybody there? They're capturing your voice. They're capturing your voice for that exact reason.
There was a YouTube video that came out a few years ago, but the whole thing was pretty much audio. But the premise of it was somebody who was a cyber criminal who wanted to demonstrate how easy it was. Mm-hmm. And basically this lady called, I don't want to call names. I think it was AT&T or whoever, but the whole thing was, she was going to show you how easy it was to get a phone line added to your account without you ever even talking to the person or authorizing it. And she called up. Everything was calm. She had kids start screaming in the background, so it sounded like she was under stress. The baby woke up from its nap and was irritable or whatever. And I mean, as you're listening to this, I'm thinking to myself, if I'm the rep that's on the phone, I'm going to fall for this 10 out of 10 times because this lady sounds like she's having a horrible day.
Yeah.
Company policy is not that big of a deal. This is a loyal client. Look how long they've been with us and all. And the next thing you know, they had a new phone getting shipped, a line set up and everything. And they never even gave a password or an authorization key to the account. It was all through shock and awe, I guess, of how they set the thing up from the beginning. It's insane.
We've seen that. I've seen that, a similar scenario. I've seen something happen to one of our family members, and this isn't necessarily a business, you know, situation, but they're going to use similar tactics. But he gets a phone call that they kidnapped his mom, and like,
jeez.
And I mean, it's like panic immediate because it's all real. It sounds real. And you hear somebody screaming in the background. And thankfully in that scenario, they were together at a resort. So they were able to, they were able to race over to their cabin and like confirm that they were there and everything was good. But I mean, it was like, he was telling us a story and he was like, I was in sheer panic. Like his uncle was with him to kind of be the voice of reason to be like, okay, like, but that's, they're going to use that same type of tactic in business environments. And they're relentless. Whatever we do, and this has been for 15 years, I've been preaching this, whatever we do from a security standpoint, no matter what we do, they're just going to find a way to do something new. And that's, I think, why the cyber market just never, it just always is changing. Because it's not like one specific form of loss that's going to be the same every day for the rest of our lives. I mean, it's always going to change. They're always going to find new ways around. And it's nuts.
Well, it's different than any other line of coverage because everything else is so kind of black and white. With workers' comp, generally what the claims are going to be. It's going to be overexertion or slip and fall or, cut by an object you're handling or whatever else. With cyber, they're inventing new ways to have a claim filed against them. And I mean, I don't know, man. It's kind of interesting. I almost wonder, there's two things that I'd be interested in picking your brain on. Number one, do you think it's going to ever start moving so fast in the evolution of these criminals where policies start getting written on 6-month terms like some of the auto carriers are? There's times where you write a policy for a year, 3 months in, that policy is already going to have things that could be presented against it. It wasn't even contemplated. That's and the funny, other one that I would ask is, how far away do you think we are before the government steps in and makes this just a compulsory coverage everybody should have?
I mean, I'd be curious to see. I mean, I heard a stat the other day that was like less than 30% of small businesses buy cyber as of the end of last year. And I'm like, oh gosh, it just pains me to hear that because I've taken so many of these calls where they find out the hard way, but I just wish that would be different. And so would the government ever mandate that? If they did, it would obviously probably create all kinds of, pushback and problems. But at the same time, it's one of those things that...
Well, you'd have a larger aggregation of premium too, though.
Yeah, so I mean, are the carriers even prepared to be ready for that? I mean, I know the carriers are doing a lot of stuff in the backgrounds to make sure they've got the backup, the backing power to pay big claims if it ever were to happen. So it's there's a lot. It's scary.
My standard, it doesn't matter what the size of the company is. If somebody says, I'm not going to buy that cyber, it's too much, without even blinking an eye, I'm going to say, if you can't afford the premium, you certainly can't afford the claim.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's where I think a lot
I mean, it, Yeah, it's like a small business is they're done. They're going out of business.
If they don't even realize, right? Like, I mean, that's the whole thing. That so much of this is third party. If you want to self-insure for your property, if you want to self-insure for the comp and collision on your vehicle, that's one thing.
Right.
But you can't self-insure for the unknown and third-party liability, whether it be the standard coverages like GL and auto, where somebody can go get a plaintiff's attorney and you blow up the claim. Cyber is no different. They just don't need to work as hard for that claim value to get blown up. I mean, I don't know what the average claim value is on a cyber claim, but I can about reasonably assume it's not cheap. I mean,
I think last year, I think the average claim was over $4 million.
Jeez.
That's the average claim. And the thing I'd say too, when you talk about non-buyers, is not just, you know, the money aspect of it, but you have a breach. Let's say you get that ransomware attack Friday at 4 o'clock. What are you going to do? And to watch businesses, I've seen these things, you know, in my time, I've seen scenarios where an agent called me and said, hey, my clients had a breach. They're locked up. They don't know what to do. Their entire board, all their board members were in a conference room together. Every single one of them is on the phone with somebody different asking for help. And I'm like, stop, like, just stop. And so like the having carriers who have expert panels put together now, and a plan in place. We did one of our videos in CyberU is what to do in the event of a claim. And I think that's probably one of the most important ones I would want all my agents to watch, as well as their insurers, mm-hmm. because you need to know ahead of time. It's no longer wait till it happens and figure it out. Know ahead of time. The second it happens to me, this is who I'm calling. That makes a big difference. I have seen claims before where you get, you know, ransomware attack for a manufacturer, and we had them with good solid coverage, which was great. It helped them survive and get through it. But when they started the process and we notified the carrier stepped in, all the proper procedures were being followed, but the insured was freaking out and the agent called me, was going nuts. And I finally, you know, because their expectation was that because we have cyber insurance, we call the carrier, they click the easy button, and everything goes away. That was their mentality. I did a video on this thing too. And you know, I had to actually, in that scenario, say they're going to be shut down for several days, if not weeks. Like, that's going to happen. But thankfully, we've got a policy. We've got business interruption. It's, you know, and so if you don't have all this and you aren't familiar with the process, you know, what could be a $200,000 experience could turn into a $1 million plus experience because you took all the wrong actions in the beginning, and then you're hit with all the, you know, the regulatory issues and everything that comes on the back end of poor handling of a claim. I mean, there's some, you know, you go back to the Experian claim, that was like the textbook example of what not to do in the event of a claim. I mean, it was handled so poorly, and it cost them a lot of money to go back and kind of backtrack.
And what's the craziest claim you've seen?
Hold on one second. I want to hear that, but I want to say one other thing that I think is really, like, everything Zane said for the last 3 minutes sounded like Charlie Brown's teacher to me. As soon as he told me that the average cyber claim is around $4 million. Okay. Because this is where
it used to be like a million when we were talking about it a couple years ago.
Right. But more importantly, for all you agents and producers out there, probably about time to look at your cyber book and see the limits you're recommending and what you're selling, and whether or not you're recommending an appropriate limit. And if they don't want to buy it, they buy down. You have some sort of a sign off form in place showing what you recommended, because I'm willing to bet you this, Zane, I'm willing to bet you that you don't have a whole lot of agents that are going out and writing $4 million cyber policies. They probably start at a million and very rarely go up. And I'm not talking about the people that are doing it the right way. I'm talking about the average agency out there that doesn't really understand cyber, but they want to make sure they do something to protect their client. And they may feel like they're doing them a service by selling them $1 million, but they don't have any way to project or calculate what an event would actually cost them. So they don't even know where to start to recommend the right limits. I got to believe that the overwhelming majority of people out there are probably underinsured.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. And that's a tough one to answer when people ask, what limit should we buy?
That's not your job to answer that. They need to be asking the right questions at the point of sale.
Yeah, I mean, you can, there's different data points that you can look at and this and that, but you know, it used to be that if it used to be, let's take your record count and let's, you know, and but then when that was happening, you had all these inflated numbers. It was, oh, you know, notification costs $200 per record. And I was like, no, that's not actually it. Like, if that's a that's a number that was put out there of the overall loss per record, but if you break it down, notification was only a couple dollars, and now maybe you can use business interruption as a potential. But at the same time, if you're a manufacturer and you're generating this much money per day and you're down for these many days, yeah, here's how much you lost from that. But you're also going to lose money from having to bring a forensics team in and having to bring a breach counsel in and your reputational loss. So it really is, it is challenging to
Well,
try to.
and the other thing is, I think that is agency principles is we go through every year and start to fill out our E&O renewal application. If we have a percentage that's above a certain threshold of cyber business that we write, we're probably going to have a few questions from our E&O carrier based on the comments I made about people being underinsured.
Yeah. All right. I've been thinking hard, Kyle, on your
It's it's always a hard question to answer. It's
it
like,
was I was drawing a bit of a brain freeze thinking through, but I think I might go back deep for one. And you know, we've seen some interesting ones, but I think the one that was kind of the craziest and probably the scariest from an individual standpoint was that you had a rental company. I won't give any names, and this was 10 years ago, but you had a rental company and somebody rented a computer from them, just a home, you know, home desktop computer. Well, someone within that company had installed a specific software in that computer that gave them full complete access to the webcam. And the person who purchased it had had that computer in their bedroom when they somehow came, I don't even know how they came to find out, but they came to find out about this and that the person basically had full access to see whatever they wanted. And that turned out to be pretty, whoever
yeah.
bought the computer ended up making a lot of money on that. You know, that I would imagine it settled pretty quickly, but that was pretty creepy, to be honest with you. Like,
For
that's something
sure.
you think about, like, man, and those are things you wouldn't think about, but you
I
know,
was
that was
gonna
part of
say
it.
that just went in a direction I wasn't expecting it to.
Yeah.
Holy
Oh, it's
cow.
awful.
Well, I
And
mean, and that goes back to why they tell you to cover up your webcam on your laptop, man.
exactly. It's brutal. And the other one, I mean, you can get into ones that are really just eerie. And when we talk about the bodily injury and property damage that are on policies, those are the ones that when you find out about those claims, you're like, oh my gosh, because it's usually like somebody using, you know, hacking a company to get data to go after a certain individual. We've seen those happen before. I mean, you've seen the ones where the energy industry is always, you know, you can cause explosions. You know, a hacker can get into something and change things around and create a huge explosion. Those are probably the ones that I say they're low probability but high severity. I mean,
Yeah.
that's
Well, look
pretty
at
high severity if someone.
I don't know if it affected you, man, but AT&T like was down for till noon a couple of weeks ago, probably a month ago now, where their entire cell service was down. And you'd have thought like everybody immediately is going to, oh, China's finally got in here. But I mean, that's a real threat, you know,
Yeah.
not to get into
Isn't that why
politics.
they're shutting TikTok down? Isn't that like the same premise?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's a very real thing. I don't think our wars are going to be missiles and bombs and stuff. It's going to be take out the power grid, take out cell service, drop the internet.
I've said that for years now, that like World War III will be a cyber war, in my opinion. And
Yeah, and they're
that's
working
my
every day to
opinion.
try and make it happen.
Yeah. Look at what we would do if our, I mean, what if social media got shut down? Look at what we would do. I
Right.
mean, people
People's
wouldn't be able to
heads would
function.
explode.
People wouldn't be able to function. And we were
100%.
so 100% tied down to technology that it would be brutal. So that to me is like the ultimate fear factor, that, you know, don't even like thinking about.
Well, listen, everybody, we've given you a lot to think about today. We've been going about an hour, and I want to be respectful of Zane's time. Plus, we got Kevin Ring warming up in the bullpen, ready to come in and throw some workers' comp heat. So, like, the content we're getting out of these podcasts today is going to be insane. But I would be remiss if I didn't encourage you to go to prowriters.com and just check out the website. If you're interested in more information, reach out to Zane. You can reach out to me. I'll make sure I introduce you. I don't gain anything from it. There's no such thing as an affiliate relationship between the two of us. But I want to make sure agents have an easy way to write cyber, offer it. But most importantly, be educated on what they're doing at the point of sale. And I can't think of a better group than ProWriters. I know they've been a great partner for our agency. They've been an unbelievably great partner for the Killing Commercial agencies as a whole. And I know there's quite a few of you that have reached out to them and had a lot of success after we've had Brian Thornton on the podcast in the past. So I don't anticipate that it's going to be any different with this one. Check out ProWriters.com and you will not be disappointed in the experience that you have with them. With that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up. Zane, thanks so much for coming on today, man. Really appreciate you as always and look forward to seeing you here in a few weeks down in the happiest place on earth, Key West, Florida.
I am looking forward to it.
Sounds good, brother. We'll see you then, man.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Power Producers Podcast. You can follow Killing Commercial Insurance on Facebook and YouTube. And if you want to take your game to the next level, check out our book, The Extra 2 Minutes, and our website, killingcommercial.com.